Hello and welcome to Second Take episode 42. Finally back with some consistency here in the release of episodes. We haven't had a back-to-back weekly episode, I think, in quite a long while. Something we haven't also had in a very long while is having a show with not just having me as a host, having three hosts, which we usually had. You know, we had when we started this podcast, when it was just Sports Report podcast, when it wasn't Second Take. And now joining me for their first Second Take episode, finally back with the podcast, we have Alejandro. Yep. And we also have Aiden back with us.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about some NFL. We're going to talk about some NBA today. We have soccer back in the fold with these guys. As we know, I know nothing about soccer. I know pretty much team names and maybe a few players, and that's about it. Nothing about skills or anything, but these guys do know about that. So any of you guys that like soccer and are interested in that in the podcast, well, you are in luck because that's finally back. But first, we're going to get into the NBA draft, which happened this past Thursday. You know, a lot of dreams coming true for these players, and we are going to get into that. So the top three started out with Paolo Banchero. It's Banchero. Anyways, Paolo went number one to the Orlando Magic. This is something that wasn't really expected coming into the draft. A lot of people had Chet Holmgren going number one, possibly. And it was a lot of leading up to the draft, the day of the draft, I believe Woj came out with Banchero going number one. But before that, not a lot of talk of him being up there. We knew he was going to be in the top three for sure. Yeah. He's a great all-around player from Duke, one of the best in the country coming out of college, and very highly recruited. I believe he was the number one recruit coming into the season. So very highly recruited type of guy. Great prospect, and really is going to be a good get for the Magic, I believe.
Yeah.
Especially when Holmgren, as we know, is having kind of, you know, Holmgren as a player at Gonzaga has been outstanding. You know, didn't get Gonzaga to the promised land necessarily, but had a really, really good season out there. Good rebounder, good shooter, can stretch the floor, can do pretty much everything you want out of a modern-day NBA center. Big guy, over 7 feet, can really do whatever you want out of that type of guy. But his frame has been the biggest concern. And for me, Holmgren ended up going number two to the Oklahoma City Thunder, who, as we know, with Sam Presti, he's stockpiled all these picks. It's just been his frame is what really gets at me. And I know, Alejandro, you have a lot of concerns about him as a player. You don't think that he is necessarily all that, maybe?
Yeah, I'm not completely sold on him, to be honest. I mean, obviously he could be, but I think that very, very well could be like a starter, mid-level starter, role player.
Yeah, and I share the concerns, honestly, of his frame, because I don't think we've seen guys come into the NBA that high of a pick be that skinny. And, you know, it seems like he said that he still put a lot of work in the weight room and stuff, but it just, the results aren't really there. And you see a lot of guys coming into the league that are big centers that, you know, they're built well.
Yeah.
And you need that in the post. You need size. And, you know, even guys like Karl-Anthony Towns sometimes, you know, has concerns and trouble in the post with such a huge frame. And you'd think that they'd have a lot of power and would be able to just really bully guys like Shaq would. But necessarily, sometimes those guys don't even have it. And sometimes guys like Holmgren with such a skinny frame can still do those same things that guys with bigger frames necessarily can't. So I think that Holmgren can overcome it. I think he can play well. I just think the injuries I think, with having that type of body are really going to eat at him. I think he's going to have a similar type of career to, I think, a Kristaps Porzingis would have. I think they have the same type of body type, good, same type of play style. I think Holmgren's really more prepared coming out of college, obviously. Porzingis coming from overseas, being more of an unproven player. I think Holmgren's a little more proven coming out of Gonzaga. And I think that, honestly, if he can stay healthy, which I think is a huge concern when it comes to Holmgren, I think he's going to be a really good player in the NBA. And I think all the, even Jabari Smith coming out of Auburn, I think they're all pretty much surefire. They're going to be at least decent in the NBA. Like you said, Holmgren being a decent starter or a role player or anything like that. I don't think the floor for him or any of these top guys is a bust. I don't think they have much bust potential at all. I think these guys mostly are going to be very accomplished starting players, and I think all of them have the potential to be leaders of the team in the future.
Yeah, actually, I would agree with that. I think the Porzingis comparison is pretty good. So yeah, he's over 7 feet, but honestly, if he is to succeed at this frame, it wouldn't be at the center position, despite that large frame, because he just doesn't have the muscle to compete with the bigger centers.
Yeah.
I think that's actually a comparison. I think it gives you a little more hope for the Porzingis comparison, given Holmgren's slender frame. Yeah, I think he's not going to be a bad player because he can obviously stretch the floor. He's big and he's skilled for a large guy. But yeah, it's not going to be like the center position or anything. And yeah, I'm not completely sold on him. I was just higher on Jabari Smith in particular, a little bit higher also on Paolo. Yeah, going into the draft, obviously there's talk. All three were like the top three. They were cemented. The only talk was like in which order. Yeah. And I remember that Holmgren had the most talk, and then Smith. So Mancari was expected to go third to the Rockets, but he ended up going one. And I think they'll be good fits where they landed.
Yeah, I definitely think that the fits for each team has been it panned out pretty well, because usually at the top of the draft it's going to be best available. And I think that regardless of that, I mean, the teams that are picking in the top three, you really could pick any position, because those teams are rosters are pretty much not secured. If you're talking about the Thunder, the Rockets, and the Magic, who are just incomplete and total draft pick rebuild in that arena. So I think that they all really fit their teams really, really well. And I just, the one concern that I have with Holmgren is his, the injuries. I think if Holmgren's frame can't hold up, which I think is super possible, again, with the Porzingis comparison. With that comparison, you know, we saw Porzingis be a great player in New York, and then the injuries kind of hit, and then, you know, he's still good, decent starter, good player, but that star potential that he has is kind of washed away. And I feel like Holmgren, if he can avoid that and can stay healthy for a little while, then I think for OKC, he can be a great asset. And I think all he really needs to get to with them is get to the point where OKC is in championship contention, which is going to be a few years from now, once their picks start to finally pan out. But he needs to make it that far, and that could be a tough ask for someone at his frame, and I think is something of concern, certainly, when talking about the draft, and something that maybe OKC could have considered a Jabari Smith, or could have considered anyone behind him, like a Keegan Murray or a Jaden Ivey. But we will see in the future here how that will work out. But a lot of exciting prospects in this draft. Speaking of Jaden Ivey, the Pistons, they made two lottery picks, with one of them coming through trade. A long, long, long list of trades going on there. One of the things that really got at Knicks fans came from this trade. Obviously, Jaden Ivey out of Purdue, a two-year starter at Purdue, was performed very, very, very well for Purdue in those two seasons. had 11 points in his freshman year, didn't decide to come out, didn't do as well of a job as he did in his sophomore season. Sophomore season, he shot 46% from the field with 17.3 points. All-around, really, really good player. Good on the defensive end, good on the offensive end. Can really stretch the floor as a shooting guard and proved it in the Big Ten, where he was one of the best players in the Big Ten. Keegan Murray, who went number four before him, also a great player in his own respect, a guy that stayed a little longer in school as well. But a lot of people said, you know, Ivy was expected to go to Sacramento at four. And then Sacramento took Murray, who I believe scored 24 points this past season for Iowa, which was insane for him. But the Pistons landed Ivy, who has deep connections to Detroit, I thought was a really, really good story. And I think Ivy's a really good pickup here to play along with Cade Cunningham, who's going to be playing at the one. Now it'd have Ivy at the two, another scorer. So you got really, really good guards up there at up top now for a young team, for a team that might, you know, have to be replacing Killian Hayes, that experiment kind of not working out too well right now. So bring in Ivy to have him fall into your hands. And I think even if Keegan Murray did fall down to Detroit, I think they would have been all right there. I think Keegan Murray and Jaden Ivy right now are two very, very good players to have on your team. And I think, you know, if Sacramento doesn't ruin Keegan Murray, which is obviously a big possibility, which I, out of the top 10, I'd probably give him the biggest bust potential just alone from for him being in Sacramento. If he was on any other team, I'd say, you know, he's going to be perfectly fine, but it's what Sacramento does to you. But yeah, Ivy, great pick for Detroit. And then they come along and they say, hey, who do we have at center? Well, we got pretty much nobody. I have Isaiah Stewart, but besides for that, not a lot of depth there. They needed their big guy in the middle. So they went out and they traded for Jalen Duren. But the original pick for Jalen Duren was he got selected by the Charlotte Hornets, Michael Jordan. And then they immediately flipped that pick, Jalen Duren out of Memphis. Great center, another highly recruited guy. They flipped him immediately to the New York Knicks. The Knicks who took Usman Jang and at 11, and they traded him directly to the Oklahoma City Thunder. So Knicks fans right now, during that time where that was happening, during the draft, were all over the place because they thought they were getting Jalen Duren. Then Duren got traded from the Knicks to the Pistons for three first-round picks. So Duren was going all over the place. He didn't know where he was playing for a little bit. Knicks fans pissed off. Stephen A. was really, 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 really mad at them for not doing anything on draft night, which I honestly, I would, I'm totally with him. They're, the Knicks right now are very, very confusing as to what they're trying to do. Why most people are thinking that he, that the Knicks pretty much bailed on the draft was they're trying to free up cap space for Jalen Brunson, who is the guard for the Dallas Mavericks, who had a great postseason with Luka Doncic and was a great second option opening up for the Mavericks.
Yeah, on their Western Conference final run.
Yeah. And pretty much the Knicks are, they bailed on draft, they're going into future drafts, and they're going to take Jalen Brunson to try to get him in free agency, which I think, it, honestly, if it's a swing and a miss and they somehow don't land Brunson after all of this, after all this happening and they just don't do anything, that will be the most hilarious blunder, I think, for the New York Knicks in the past few years, which, I mean, there's been a lot.
Yeah.
Not even the past few years, maybe the past, like, 20 years, past long, like, a long, long, long while. Because the Knicks haven't been anything special for pretty much ever at this point. They haven't done anything since really the Ewing days, and even then they couldn't bring anything home. So they've been trying and trying, but every single time it just seems to fail for them. And I think, and the direction that they're going right now, I think Jalen Brunson certainly would be a good addition to the team to go along with RJ Barrett. But is Brunson really that guy that's going to get you to the promised land? No, he's not. And will he make your team better? Yeah. Yeah. Jalen Brunson certainly will make your team better. But for the Knicks right now, they need a star right now to get them somewhere. Or they need to at least take some picks, take some guys that can they can develop into good players on cheaper contracts that can get them to a certain point where they have a good, solid team that they could bring in the playoffs, win some games, and they can actually be proud of. Because right now, they're just bailing on their picks. They're bailing on younger players to sign mid-level to upper level type of players like Jalen Brunson, who has showed a lot of potential, but isn't, we know, isn't that type of superstar type of player that really deserves the type of money that he's going to get from the New York Knicks. And I'd expect the Knicks to heavily overpay Brunson, probably in the 22 around $25 million range, which is, I believe, was where he's going to be at. So,
yeah, because the Mavericks also want to keep him.
Yeah.
Mark Cuban was very adamant that his team was interested in re-signing him, extending him. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. I originally thought he was a restricted free agent, but he is unrestricted, so the Knicks could make a good run at him. But, yeah, it was definitely interesting to see how they handled draft day. I don't think their deals were that bad. I mean, they got future picks. Obviously, the pick that did leave me kind of confusing and concerned was the one where they did deal away Duren, and they had a Kemba Walker was on a smaller contract than last year, but he was also had to be. But he this year he also needed a first rounder to be bundled with him to get his contract off the books. His tenure with the Knicks obviously didn't end well, and it was a burden, so they had to package assets to get rid of him. He got cut by the Pistons. Interested to see where he goes next too. But, yeah, I think it's an interesting position for the Knicks going all in on Brunson.
Yeah. And, I mean, they got Barrett in there for younger guys. But besides for that, they have a few maybe smaller contract guys. But there's just not a lot there to love. I mean, Julius Randle took a big step back this past season.
They overpaid Fournier.
Yeah, overpaid Fournier, who they're now trying to get off the books again. It's just they've had a lot of free agency fails the past few years. And for them to go back to free agency to pay a lot of capital to try and get some guys that they think are going to do something just seems like another repeat of the same mistake that they keep making year after year after year. And you could say that, you know, they're making the mistake, that same mistake in the draft for those same amount of years. But the thing is when you're making that mistake in the draft, you got a decent shot at turning that into something. And plus, when you're drafting guys, you're not giving them $20 million contracts.
Yeah.
You're not taking up all that cap space. You still have room to take those chances. When you bail on the draft, you don't take any young guys in to develop right now so that you're set up for the future. You're set up for a few years so you're not pushed out so far that when you're finally developing those guys with those picks, you'll be in like 2030. When you take those guys, you have a smaller amount of money on the cap. And you can go out and get those free agent guys as well. You can do both. But now the Knicks kind of, for this year, have boxed themselves into a hole where they can only get undrafted free agents, which aren't really going to pan into anything most of the time. And they can take their big shot at a Jalen Brunson or a Kyrie Irving or whoever really wants to I don't know, sign up for to be a New York Knick and being that failure of an organization. But it to me, it's just a big swing and the miss again for the Knicks, even before free agency starts. And if they come out of free agency with Jalen Brunson, I guess we're just going to have to see how that pans out. But I don't really have a positive outlook for the Knicks, even if they do get Brunson in this offseason, and whoever they overpay to be his kind of bench warmers behind him.
Yeah. Yeah, they're definitely an interesting place with some older guys and some younger guys in the rotation. It's kind of interesting to see what direction they if I was the Knicks, I think I would just kind of try to sell on from the older options and try to just go young and just align myself with RJ Barrett's timeline. But at the same time, they've given some contracts that a lot of teams will not want to take on.
Yeah,
I don't think maybe people will want to take on Julius Randle's max contract. He's a big guy, and he shot 41%. Evan Fournier, definitely nobody wants to pay him that. Alec Brooks, I feel like, have some takers, as long as they're not playing him point guard. I think he's a solid wing option. That's how desperate they were last year. They were playing him point guard. That just wasn't.
Yeah.
That's not his position. That's not where he plays. Yeah, so interested to see what they do next. They really haven't made a lot of great options, but I mean choices, but yeah.
And now on to Bradley Beal. So Bradley Beal, one of the hottest free agents coming out this year. There's reports coming out that he has already made his decision about where he wants to go. And there's also been some reports that he is just expected to decline his player option and just re-sign. And that contract's going to be for $248 million over 5 years. As we know, the NBA is set up so that players are enticed to re-sign because they're going to get like $60 million more than they would on the open market. But there's been a lot of rumors about Beal moving and such because he is unhappy with his situation a lot of the time, understandably, because it's the Washington Wizards. You know, he played with John Wall, and that didn't work out, and now back and forth.
I mean, that was a kind of exciting team until John Wall's gave away.
But Beal really hasn't had anything that he can look at and say, this is kind of a championship contender type of team. And I think, understandably, if I was Bradley Beal, I'd want that type of team. But I think what Beal's doing here is that he's seeing kind of his options right now. And I think he wants to, at the age that he's at, which is his late 20s, early 30s, he's looking at this as kind of his last, like, really big contract, I think, that he can really, really cash into. And I think he wants to get the most out of that, and obviously getting the most out of that is going to be him re-signing with the Wizards. And I think he's going to ultimately test out that contract. He's going to do it for a year. And if the Wizards can't really build anything or don't look like they're building anything, they just drafted Johnny Davis. So that could totally change up some things for Bradley Beal if he works out. But if the Wizards don't work out after this past this next season, then I think Beal ultimately will demand a trade out of Washington and take his contract. So kind of the best of both worlds while only playing one season with Washington left after this. Because I don't really think Beal's super married to being in DC right now, especially with how much he's kind of flirted with, you know, moves to Boston and elsewhere in these past few seasons. So I think ultimately for a player like Beal, if I were him, I'd move out of DC. But I also do see the perks of signing that contract and then demanding a trade later, even if that is kind of a little bit morally corrupt for a player. But I don't think they really care in today's NBA about that.
Yeah.
You know, it is a business, so I think they just really want their money here. But I think Beal could, if he does want to go to a team like Boston, I think you know, with having Tatum already there and having Brown already there, there's a lot of shots to go around necessarily, but I think that Tatum and Brown, I think they want to stay that 1-2, and I'm not sure if really Beal wants to take on that third role. If he is that type of player to take on that third role with the team, I think it could totally work out being the two guard and having Brown shift down into the wing position and having Tatum at the four like he usually is. But I don't think that Beal necessarily is going to want to take that third role, even with his close relationship to Tatum.
I just think he's going to re-sign. Honestly, I'm not sure if I see another team training for him, even if he, request one, because obviously he wouldn't have that much of a leverage. And, I mean, if Boston finished with another first-round exit or something this year, I think they could have made a run for Beal. But I think after, obviously, an NBA Finals trip, they're not going to look to change things up too dramatically. I'm pretty sure a lot of words from President of Basketball Operations, Brad Stevens, have hinted that they're not going to look to do anything too drastic, which makes sense. And, personally, I mean, I like Tatum playing the three. I feel like he was more comfortable there because then he has he's better matched a lot of players. But obviously, it could work, but I don't think they're going to go for him. Obviously, a trade would require a lot of money. Yeah. I think it would hard cap them, and I'm not sure if they want to go there.
Especially with if Beal does re-sign and would have to do a trade to get into Boston, I think Boston really wouldn't be willing to give up the, you know, you gotta meet cap requirements to go get Beal, and I don't think they really want to give up the big contracts that they have on their books right now, like a smart contract or something to go get Beal. I don't think they'd really want to do that, and I'd be against doing that right now to get it, because the problem with the Celtics right now is obviously I think maturity comes into it a lot. You know, these guys are really, really young and they're doing outstanding for being as young as they are. But I also think the number two or maybe the number one over that concern why they lost the finals ultimately is because they don't have enough depth around the team. They need more players. And I think giving up, you know, stars do winning in this league, but we've seen time and time again these past few years, super teams are starting to fail again. And it's really coming into more of a kind of that one star, two star type of team with a deep squad built around them that can carry the load for guys that are, you know, need to take a break. When Curry was in the finals this past, obviously like last week, when Curry was in the finals, they'd sit him down and then you'd have Jordan Poole come in, hit a bunch of threes, and, you know, Gary Payton too come in and play defense and just really take over the reins of the game. And Boston could really just never take a break because they were always getting attacked by the depth of Golden State, the highest payroll in the NBA and all of sports right now at $350 million. They really just put a lot into their teams over there. And that's really what Boston needs to do, is they need to open up their books and they need to start paying for depth. And they can't lose the depth that they have right now.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing that Golden State has done. I mean, obviously, all of you pointed out that they were built, like a lot of their players were drafted there. It's not really like they brought in a bunch of big name free agents or anything. So that's a lot of teams in the NBA. Before, obviously, as we can tell from like the way the cap's built, players earn more money as long the longer they've played in the league. Yeah. So all their guys, like with their veteran laden squad, have earned big contracts, like Green, Curry, obviously, Thompson are on big contracts. And what Golden State has done is, you know, re-sign them, keep them, and then build around them.
Yeah. Which is so, another thing that shows you why New York is doing the wrong thing in trying to abandon the draft and go to free agency.
Yeah, definitely.
I would agree with that. But yeah, so that's what Boston needs to do. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we're not talking about their future, but yeah, they would need to keep their which obviously they've already signed their two main pieces long-term. Obviously, they'd have to re-sign Grant Williams soon, but they also need to bring in new pieces as well. And I don't think selling the little depth they have for Bradley Beal would be the right move.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick ad break and we'll be back after that. And we are back with some NBA talk with PJ Tucker declining player option.
Yep, he declined it, and obviously he will be looking to re-sign him. But the Sixers and Bucks are expected to make runs at the accomplished veteran who won a ring two years ago now.
With the Bucks.
Yeah, with the Bucks.
Yeah.
He had a good run with the Heat. He's reliable. He obviously can shoot the three, and obviously offers a lot of experience and leadership. So interesting to see who goes for him.
And can play really a lot of the positions on the court. As yeah. Playing center with the Rockets.
I saw a rumor saying
Rockets.
3 years, $30 million from the Sixers. I feel like that'd be a lot. But
that does feel like a lot, especially for
37-year-old.
Yeah, for Tucker.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who does bring a lot of experience, and the Sixers overpay a lot. You know, we saw that the Al Horford one, but,
yeah,
you know, they're the Sixers. We also got the Pistons. They traded for Jeremy Grant. They traded Jeremy Grant
away to the Blazers. And the price did surprise a lot of people. It only took Milwaukee's pick, which the Blazers picked up pretty recently in another trade.
Which won't really amount to anything, I don't think.
Yeah. I think it was a pretty interesting move. It kind of signals intent more to me than anything else. Because I don't know, it kind of looked like they were just standing in between contending and rebuilding, and then all of a sudden they make this move.
Yeah.
Kind of does make me confused, because obviously they did sell on like Norman Powell for not that much. So I'm kind of confused as what the direction is, but we'll see.
Prior to this trade, I honestly thought the Blazers were going to blow it up. I thought Lillard was going to be out of there soon. And I thought Lillard was going to actually work up the courage to
ask out of
Portland, which I've been wanting him to do forever because I feel bad for him. You know, the loyalty only gets you so far, and it's not getting him anywhere in Portland. But now with this Grant trade, it seems like maybe Portland actually is interested in kind of building a team around him instead of rebuilding, which is nice for them. I mean, Grant brings a lot of defensive versatility into that that team, and also brings a improved offense that he got in Detroit, where he could actually show his total skill set.
Yeah,
where he didn't have to
obviously he
do that in Denver.
Shot Chuck a little bit in Detroit, the only option on offense at times, but obviously the Blazers won't need him to do that anymore, and he can play more off ball, and I think he'll be fine in Portland with playing off ball, playing off Damian Lillard.
And not a ton of value got back for Detroit. They didn't get a ton back in the trade, but honestly, I think all the teams in the NBA saw that they
have over $40 million cap now. So yeah, I think that was a goal.
They needed to offload some players that weren't obviously Grant's not in their window.
Yeah, trying to get more touches for their younger guys.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense for both teams.
Win-win for me.
Yeah, similar to the Christian Wood trade, I think.
Yeah,
a little bit
one
from
team
Houston.
Opens up younger team, one rebuilding team opens up minutes for their younger guys, and another one takes on team trying to build to the next level. Kind of like mid-playoff contention.
It works out for both teams in the long run.
Takes on a more valuable player. Next up, Brad Stevens in an interview said that he has the okay, presumably from like the front office and ownership, to do whatever we need to do in terms of improving the roster. So we'll see them probably use the mid-level exception and possibly also one of their trade exceptions.
Which I believe is like a $17 million
exception
that they got going right now.
Fournier, and then they have two smaller $8 or $7 million ones.
Yeah.
He also said that they may not use the Fournier trade one if they don't find a suitable trade, because that one expires the soonest, and the other two expire at the trade deadline. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what they do with that.
I hope they use the trade exception. I definitely the $17 million one that's coming up here. I definitely hope they do. But if you can't find the right trade, I wouldn't force anything, especially when you're messing right now with a roster that has just made an NBA Finals. I don't think you really want to, just for the sake of using a trade exception to blow up anything that has been that has worked so good for Boston this past year, honestly. So, you know, if they can find that right trade, and I think Brad has done a great job in the year that he's had.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
Not even having any general manager experience, but coming in here and, you know, building a team that ultimately got to a finals, bringing back Al Horford and key pieces like that, having Marcus Smart have a more elevated role, hiring Ime Udoka.
That was a masterclass.
Yeah, just outstanding job. Adding Derek White at the deadline for guys that he brought in. At the start of the season.
Yeah, now looking at the roster, and most of our guys are signed long-term. Mm-hmm. So pretty well-constructed roster from Brad after 1 year already. Interested to see how they add on to that.
Really just needs to add the depth.
Yeah, because the depth is what they needed. So interested to see how they add on. Mm-hmm. Next up, John Collins says he's not looking like he's going to play for the Hawks. They seem very intent on making a move.
Yeah, and, you know, John Collins has been like this for a while.
Yeah.
Honestly, but it finally seems like this might be the end of the line for him and the Hawks. Him and Trae Young have been kind of that dynamic duo in Atlanta that has semi-worked out around there, but Collins isn't the number two. We know Collins is the number two for really any team out there.
I mean, yeah, he's a decent player, but obviously he's not really a shot creator, and for that reason, the money he's getting, like a $25 million, means he's a little overpaid because he can't really create his own shot. But he's a solid player. I feel like he'd be a good like extra option because he can, as a four, step back and step out there and hit the three. Mm-hmm. So for a different team, I think he could be great and excel in a different role. But the Hawks are probably looking for some scoring from the wing. So we'll see what they take. So I think he really could succeed in another different role. And I think the Hawks could use the cap space or something mm-hmm. to also continue building around Trae Young.
And he's definitely a good four in the post. He's shown that, you know, he's declined a little bit in the scoring department from the past few seasons before that, when Atlanta had that long run with Young in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Past 2 years ago, around there. But, you know, coming off the heights of averaging 23 in his per 36. But averaging 21.6 three seasons ago, and now down to 16.2 points this past season. He's still obviously shown that he can be a good player, and the rebounds has been good. All around a good player in the post at the four. But his scoring has gone down on a team that necessarily he right now kind of is the number two over there. And to see that decline is a little bit concerning, and definitely I don't think he matches the contract that he has right now.
Yeah.
But to be more of a three or a four on a contending team is where he needs to be. And I think a team that needs that will eventually come and scoop him up for a reasonable price that I think the Hawks will be satisfied with.
Yeah. And now we're moving on to that Kyrie situation. Obviously, it's been reported that him and the Nets reached an impasse in their contract negotiations, mainly because obviously of Kyrie's availability issues, and the Nets want a contract to reflect that. Reportedly, obviously they don't want it to be fully guaranteed. They don't want to give him all those years. We obviously don't know the exact details of how they want to make it more flexible. Obviously, they want a contract that works in their best interest. And Kyrie hasn't been the most available employee, so obviously they don't really want to give him the same amount of respect as they would like Kevin Durant. Interested to see there, obviously, because of that, there have been a lot of trade talks.
Yeah, and I definitely think that this has been a long time coming with Kyrie because of the way he, again, not being an available employee exactly. to the Nets organization, not following any of their really regulations with the vaccine things. And really, I think it started there for Kyrie, kind of the just disrespect from him to the organization, and then the organization not tolerating really where he stands on most things. And I think that disconnect right now has, especially after the first round sweep and everything, has reached, again, the word that they used in the reports was an impasse between the two sides. And I don't think that Kyrie really wants to stay in Brooklyn, and I don't think Brooklyn really cares that much for Kyrie. I think the side from Brooklyn, I think Brooklyn does, they have a way they want to re-sign Kyrie. I think that is somewhere in there that they do. I don't think it's completely one-sided where they both like just completely hate each other. I think, you know, Durant has say in Brooklyn's front office because he's really the one that brought in this whole entire idea of these Brooklyn Nets. After they got rid of D'Lo, they brought him in, they brought in Kyrie. And I think Durant right now is looking at the team, looking at how bad it did this past season, And he's saying, if we lose Kyrie for a whole entire season instead of half a season because he's sitting out, like, how bad is he going to be alone? And I think Durant right now is kind of just hammering at hammering at the GM to get Kyrie back on the team.
He's 34, so obviously he doesn't want to do any more. Obviously, he's playing heavy, heavy minutes in the playoffs. He doesn't really want to do any more heavy shouldering in the regular season as well. Obviously he'd want to keep Kyrie.
Yeah.
That's apparently been Kyrie's biggest tool in negotiations. Like, if you lose me, you lose Kevin Durant. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the biggest problem for the Nets here is if they don't have Kyrie, Durant's obviously not going to be happy because he's going to be by himself. And there's really not much of a, like, backup plan or not a lot of things that it looks like the Nets could do after losing that. They'd kind of have to just blow everything up, go into full rebuild mode again. And that's not really what it seemed like the Nets organization wanted to do. It seemed like they kind of wanted to go win now, and that did not pay off at all.
Yeah, especially when all the Knicks, not the Knicks picks, the Nets picks are with the Houston Rockets currently. So they are really screwed if this starts to fall through for them and, you know, Kyrie leaves and Durant decides to leave. And I think Durant, there is some upside of him staying with the Nets and seeing if they can build a squad around him, even if Kyrie leaves, because everybody still has the thing against him that, you know, he only won his rings in Golden State. And I think for his legacy, it could definitely be an advantage to stay in Brooklyn, stay loyal to a team and actually try to win on his own without, you know, joining the super team that was the Golden State Warriors of 2016, 2017, so on. So I think there is some advantages there for KD to really stay with Brooklyn. But again, we also have the rumors of, you know, Damian Lillard recruiting him to Portland, which I think could also
wasn't really
be
a rumor. I mean, he just posted
it. It was kind of isn't that tampering? Like,
I don't know. Last time I checked, players can like openly like negotiate and like ask players to join them. But I thought some people countered me on that, so I'm not completely sure, to be honest. But
it's kind of blurred lines.
Clearly, I didn't find or anything, so I guess it's okay. Because it was open.
Like, Nurkic was tweeting about it.
I mean, last year,
if there was anything DeJounte wrong Murray, with it, they would have done something about it already.
DeJounte Murray posted Zach LaVine in a Spurs jersey. So I'm not sure. That's obviously beyond.
Yeah, I mean, there's no harm in just posting a Photoshop of someone in a different jersey.
Yeah,
it's just kind of
Talking about like our opinions on the situation, I feel like my prediction ultimately is that nothing big happens. I feel like this is a lot of talk and a lot of negotiation with Kyrie's camp, kind of like putting the Nets out there. I think obviously they reached the impasse and then Kyrie's kind of like put the light out there, put the spotlight of the media on them, say, hey, look, this is going on. Because I feel like the Nets will realize, like, if we don't resign them, Kyrie, KD won't want to be here. And obviously, they didn't even have their own pick, so I don't think they want to go down that road. So I feel like they'll just take their losses and just pay Kyrie the cash, to be honest.
Yeah. And Portland's probably just waiting in the wings.
I mean, every team in the NBA would be.
Yeah, definitely.
KD. Just absolutely dying with the thought of being able to team up with Lillard, especially now that they just got Jeremy Grant as well.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about this, and I think that a dream scenario, I think they had no cap space at all, and I don't think it would really work with Michael Porter Jr., but if the Nuggets could swing a trade
I've seen a lot of
Durant
trade packages and like YouTube videos, and obviously Twitter users, those aren't the greatest, but
yeah.
I've seen some YouTube videos. I feel like some of them have been good, and the Nuggets would definitely be able to offer an enticing package. Because obviously they were really good. I think including Jamal plus Porter would be a lot of the pay.
Definitely.
But Kevin Durant is Kevin Durant, and we saw how far they got without those two last year. So if you added Kevin Durant, Jokic, that'd obviously be
1-2 combo would be
a really good team.
Insane
that,
in the
that
West.
That would be a really, really just pretty hard team to stop.
And I think that would really pose a threat to Golden State, obviously. And I think,
especially with how small Golden State plays,
they
would be forced to go big, keep Looney out there, and they wouldn't be able to have the lineups that they would necessarily want to have.
Yeah. And I think Durant in Portland would also be – I think Durant really anywhere is going to be very effective. But just dream scenarios, you know, him in Portland, it would work as well.
Portland and Denver would probably be the two scariest places for him to be in terms of contenders that seem like they could realistically put him in a package.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Or if the Clippers, like, switched out Paul George.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be surprised.
And brought in Durant and Kawhi, that would be insane.
It's a pretty Clippers thing to do.
Yeah, well, the Clippers have been swinging stars around for the past.
I thought the Clippers would be pretty good this coming season.
Trying to get on the level of their counterparts in LA.
Although right now that's really not that hard to do. But
they're both kind of suffering.
Yeah.
I mean, I think this coming season the Clippers would be pretty good because Paul George Kawhi thing has worked pretty well when they're not both healthy.
It's just the consistency and injury.
Yeah, their health problems hasn't been the greatest, but yeah. So, yeah, I think that's part of it for the Kyrie situation. A lot of the teams interested aren't able to offer the best packages, which is also why I don't really see him moving
on. Yeah. Like, I don't see the Knicks being that enticing to Kyrie because you're just heading across town, really. You're just going to a different borough, and it's a worse situation.
Front office in turmoil.
I think
Knicks would be the Nets front office isn't even that bad. They haven't handled it that badly. It's been Kyrie that's just not been available, and obviously – that makes sense. Like, they don't want to offer someone who's not available a fully, like, that much commitment.
Yeah. And I think the Clippers would be definitely, like, a really good lineup. But then again, the Clippers seem like they're too inconsistent for what they currently have on their roster. It just never seems like it's coming across to actually work. So I don't know how I feel about that.
They usually seem like they have a pretty good roster, and then it just never really comes to fruition.
They're the Dallas Cowboys of basketball at this point. Always good on paper, and then it never fully works out. And then, obviously, the Lakers is the big one for Kyrie. That's been getting a lot of traction. Him going back with LeBron. Which
would be kind of weird after him wanting to leave to be the star guy, the leader, the number one for a team. Maybe he realized he's not really a fan of it, not that good at it, and didn't really work out. So going back to LeBron to bring back that brotherhood, that partnership, hopefully try and get them a ring. But I still don't think that would be enough to get the Lakers anywhere
the Lakers
near where they want to be.
Have enough assets to give up.
No.
Yeah. And I think on like LeBron and Kyrie, when they were in Cleveland was insane. And if they but
I don't think
if this happens, they're not getting that back.
But it's not really the same Kyrie as it was.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
He's still a great player, but he's not playing at that level. That
the player is probably better because he's really efficient. He's a slightly better playmaker, but he's just not as available.
Yeah, and I feel like the way the Lakers played last season. And the tension there is kind of like
just seems everything about that is just not something I'd want to be involved.
Going from the Nets toxic locker room with all the stuff that happened with Harden, and then obviously the Kyrie stuff now, and with Durant and everything, and just not knowing, and then going into the Lakers locker room with Anthony Davis getting injured all the time, Westbrook's probably gone at that point, but having the ghost of kind of the Westbrook failure there, and then having LeBron kind of just all over the place right now. Going into that, it just seems like kind of a dumpster into another dumpster type of move. And
yeah, I feel bad for Garvin Ham.
Yeah, he's taking a big job. Yeah, Frank Vogel kind of a sacrificial lamb of that, I guess. But
I mean, he wasn't doing the greatest job.
But yeah.
Yeah. What much you could do with that roster?
Yeah, honestly, the roster last year was set up to fail, and the way that they played is just...
I mean, LeBron defended it, but
yeah,
ultimately the public was right. I mean, it wasn't that
it wasn't going to work out.
Full of old players, and it just didn't work out.
So now on to the NFL. There's a report, we've been talking about Baker Mayfield for what feels like forever, ever since the Deshaun Watson atrocity of a trade happens. There's no other words
to describe how bad that all is.
The Hall of a Trade that turned into a horrible contract.
They put glue in their face because they said they did research they didn't really do an investigation, and they paid the price for that.
Yeah, and now Watson might not even play. Well, I'm
it
at this point.
Like he's going to touch the NFL field again, at least for
at least for
a
this
few
season.
Years.
Yeah,
at least a season or two.
So now, as we know, Baker Mayfield has basically been shunned and, you know, just pissed on by the Cleveland Browns front office, and they basically have thrown away the only person who has given them anything good in the past 20 years. So
now
that
they
did that,
beg him to come back, but now he doesn't want to.
Yeah, so he's not going to come back. They're going to trade him, and they're willing to cover half of Baker's salary while they ride Jacoby Brissett into the hole of 5-11 or 5-12 now. So honestly, the Browns willing to cover half of Baker's salary is what's going to have to get them get him out of Cleveland, and hopefully to Carolina, which I think is the right move for him, getting DJ Moore an actual decent quarterback. Hopefully he won't pull in any of the OBJ stuff while he's there. I think Baker still has development left. He showed a lot in his rookie season that I think needs that is still with him that can come back. But Seahawks, Panthers are going to make a move at some point because what they have on their roster just isn't good enough. At all.
The Panthers.
Those
yeah.
are really the only two teams that I could see trying to make a move for them. Everyone else is pretty much
kind of set.
Has their quarterback or has who they think can be their quarterback that they're trying to develop. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So, now on to Terry McLaurin, the Commanders wide receiver. And another franchise that really has
no clear image or goal of what they're trying to do with themselves.
Yeah, Dan Snyder is currently in a trial that he didn't show up for with the House of Representatives. So that's good for him. Another great move from an NFL owner who sucks ass. So, and now we have another just horrible move from that front office, and they're not really negotiating super well with their star player, their best player besides for Chase Young, of course, and Terry McLaurin, who was a great draft pick and all, who they should be paying a bag, really, to stick around because they don't have a problem.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Because obviously we've seen the wide receiver market explode this season especially, and obviously he's looking for his money because he's been their best offensive player.
And he's earned it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He's looking for it. And
especially without
giving it to him.
Real quarterback.
Exactly. He's reached back-to-back 1,000-yard campaigns without a really good option under center. So obviously he's looking for his money.
Still doesn't have a good option
market,
under center.
And then they're just not giving it to him. So obviously I'd be annoyed too and sitting out.
Especially when they're currently paying the bag for the guy who's under center that they just got in Carson Wentz, who can't hit like anything anymore. Not a shell of himself.
Run game, especially Jonathan Taylor.
Yeah. So you need this guy. You need to pay him immediately. You had no problem paying Curtis Samuel this past last offseason now to be the second wide receiver. So now you're not willing to pay your number one wide receiver, the big bucks, one of the best wide receivers in the NFL, guy that fell into your lap in the draft.
Not looking very good at all.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to pay your number two that much money, then at least pay Terry some money because Curtis Samuel's not going to be a number one wide receiver. He never was with the Panthers. He's never going to be with the Commanders. I think he's a great wide receiver, but he's just not going to be that. So I think they need to get their act together and pay Terry the money that he deserves.
There are a lot of teams that would love to trade him and give him the money right there.
Yeah.
And then
it would be a Commanders move, honestly, to just wait and just lose him completely in free agency.
Yeah.
Or franchise tag him and give him way more money than he has and then just have him disgruntled again.
Yeah.
Just keep requesting trades. But Goodell needs to step in and make Snyder snub the team because he's just mismanaged every aspect
of
football.
I feel like a lot of fans just feel bad for now Commander fans.
I'm surprised they just haven't done anything with the team. So I think he needs to sell the team. But that opinion is shared by pretty much the majority. So, yeah. Also, there was a report that came out that Russell Wilson, he pushed hard for a coaching change before being traded to the Broncos, a trade in which I think Seattle pulled off a lot of good assets for a quarterback that was taking up a lot of cap space and was kind of not in the window for Seattle anymore, who had a horrible defense and the offensive line problems just was never fixed there in Seattle. And really, you know, a good wide receiver core, a running game that's decent, but behind that offensive line couldn't really get anything done as of late. So Wilson demanding a coaching change to stay in Seattle, I do somewhat buy it. I think Pete Carroll has been a little bit outdated lately for what he's been trying to do, bringing in not really fixing the defense at all, not fixing the defensive scheme, something that he used to be known for when he built the Legion of Boom, obviously, and had such a great success with that. Now kind of failing and spending draft, obviously that falls up more on the front office, but Carroll having say in that and saying the schemes that set up the defense, you know, spending that first round pick on Jamal Adams, which hasn't worked out at all because Adams really hasn't proved to be a top, I wouldn't even put him in my top five safeties right now in the NFL. So definitely not worth that first round pick. I think it would have been much better spent on guys like Minka Fitzpatrick, younger guys that are better in coverage and not so much reliant on being more of a box type of safety and can just really do everything. But do I believe Russ pushed for that coaching change? I do. But do I still think Russell really is going to do anything with the Broncos? I think he can. I think he's going to push really hard. I think he's going to do decent with the Broncos roster, but I think that AFC West is going to really screw with Russell and his development. So I don't really think anything is going to happen really to either side. I think both sides are kind of down. Just going to go down in the future. So also, there was a report that Alvin Kamara could be suspended 6 to 17 games. So a very wide range there for Alvin Kamara, running back for the Saints. There was a, he got into a fight the day before the Pro Bowl and then proceeded to play, if you guys didn't know about that, while he had a warrant out for his arrest, which was one of the wildest stories out there when it first came out. And it kind of came and went. It
wasn't really talked about.
Yeah, it kind of weird. It went under the rug, which is really weird. But now the suspension news came right back out, and now it's 6 to 17 games for that assault charge, it looks like, from the NFL, which I think is good that they're doing that. I think a year-long suspension might be a little bit much. Obviously, Kamara super dumb for doing this and just playing anyways, not really reporting it, which is a little bit crazy. But again, I just want to, we're going to take a quick break right now. But before I'm done with the segment, obviously, when we're talking about suspensions, Goodell has gotten these wrong, and he'll probably get this one wrong again. But obviously, the one that he's got wrong the most is the Calvin Ridley one. So free Calvin Ridley.
Free Calvin. All right, and now we're back for a third segment. We're starting off with Major League Baseball. Today, the Yankees and Astros played the final game of their four-game series. The Yankees walked it off on an Aaron Judge homer, even which means that they split the series 2-2. Astros pitching was dominant through starting the beginning of the last game through a few innings of this game. Obviously, they were no hit last game, and now they were no hit through the first few innings of today's game, combined 16 innings. Ultimately, they only able to split the series. Aaron Judge hit two walk-offs for the two Yankees wins, and they were pretty exciting to watch. Two of the AL's best teams.
It was impressive that they split the series with
all those innings.
All those 16 innings.
Yeah,
being
it was
a
really good work from the Astros pitching, but I guess the offense wasn't able to help in other games. Another game of heavyweights in the NL, the Dodgers and Braves played today, and they also went to extra innings where the Dodgers prevailed in a repeat of last year's National League Championship Series. In non-game news, Judge and the Yankees reached a $19 million agreement for this year for arbitration. Aaron Judge said that it would not affect extension talks. Obviously, he rejected an extension with the Yankees before the season, and that was already on offer for $300 million.
Yeah.
And he's had an excellent season, front runner for the MVP.
He's definitely going to get paid
by many.
For sure.
They have betting services, and he's the face of one of the worlds, like the worlds, including your soccer, everything, biggest franchises. So he's definitely going to get a lot of money, probably looking at $350, $400 million
definitely
in this market. Definitely looking at $30, $35 million per year.
So, and I think New York's willing to pay that for a guy that's been carrying their team for
a while. They made a sizable offer before, but he's just proved that he's another level. We're talking about the Red Sox. After their 10-19 start, they have been a blazing 31-12 since then, winning many series and back off the back of the best offense in the league over that time. Devers has obviously been doing his thing.
Bogart stepped up.
Martinez has been good. And the Red Sox have been doing well despite missing a lot of key pitching pieces.
Story signing has definitely been affected a lot. He's gotten hot these past few games. Definitely.
Yeah.
Has done good.
Today in Mariners Angels, benches cleared after Jesse Winker was hit by a pitch. A lot of players, including the injured Anthony Rendon, came off. Was actually throwing swings with his non-injured left hand.
Yeah, didn't he hit him with, like, cast or something?
Yeah. And
that one was crazy.
Reigning NL MVP, Bryce Harper, will be out for extended period after he broke his thumb. Blake Snell hit him and while leaving the field. Bryce made sure to say that he knew it wasn't Snell's intention to hit him. Unfortunate to see such a talent out for a while.
But... And really good respect from Bryce, honestly. You know, he this year, you could argue he's been one of the best hitters in the league, certainly coming off of last season where he was the NL MVP, having a great season with the Phillies.
Yeah.
And you can see that this season he was bringing the same amount, if not more, to the field than as he was last year.
Yeah.
So kind of sad to see him go off right now, especially when he's just been so hot at the plate.
Exactly, yeah, for sure. Especially when he's like one of the faces of the game.
Yeah.
Now moving on to European football, and we have a lot of catching up to do in the transfer market. A lot of big moves have already gone down, and now we're just looking to recap. There's not that many moves going on right now, but we're going to start off with one of the biggest. Erling Haaland obviously has moved to Manchester City. It wasn't the biggest deal, actually. A pretty decent price for a talent of his level, and he's going to be signing there for a few years. Obviously, City have needed a striker, so interested to see how he fits there and how they much more dominant they will be. Obviously, they've already won the league 4 to 5 years last year. They're looking for the Champions League.
Yeah, they've already been so dominant in England after having pretty sizable gap at striker without Sergio Aguero. Now they're addressing that need, and I would expect them to maintain just how dominant they have been and just extend their hold on top of English football. Darwin Nunez joined Liverpool for 80 million euros plus some add-ons.
Yeah.
Exciting Uruguayan striker.
Yeah, it was an interesting move. I feel like, I don't know.
I feel
a
like
lot of teams were interested,
but
like kind of like confused, like they didn't know what to make of it. There's been a lot of criticism of his game outside of the goal scoring. I feel like a lot of like his build up play, his touch, his heading, everything. So interested to see how he does there. I feel like if anyone's able to elevate his game, it'd be Klopp. But as of now, coming from Benfica, they've actually had a lot of players score a lot of goals for them in recent years, which haven't reached this much attention. But Nunez has. He did well in the Champions League, which is usually an indicator for bigger clubs, trying to see how they'll do in a bigger environment. So if anyone can elevate him, it'd be Klopp. So interested to see how he does. And then another transfer that went down, Aurélien Tchouaméni is joining Real Madrid for 100 million euros.
Very exciting young talent, but he's already proving to be a really good player right now as well. just showing the how Real Madrid is really reinforcing for their dominant midfield trio that they've had for so long with Modric, Kroos, and Casemiro. Now they have Federico Valverde, Eduardo Camavinga, and now Tchouaméni to come in their footsteps. So should be a very exciting transition for Real Madrid.
Yeah, I think it's really impressive how they've replaced such a dominant trio in midfield that's now brought them four Champions Leagues. Obviously, Modric is part of fifth. But the trio has bought four. And it's been really impressive how long they've lasted. Obviously, they started the Champions League final. Now they've effectively replaced them. I think it's really impressive how it's come up, has come together. It's a big transfer fee, but he's a really special player. He's versatile. He can play either on double pivot or he can play as a lone defensive midfielder. And he's already had a lot of appearances for France. He played in the Nations League, and they won the Nations League, obviously, in 2021. He can provide cover for players like Pogba to move forward in Real Madrid. It could be Modric. Moving forward, it could be Camavinga, who has ball progression skills moving forward. So I think it's a good transfer. This season, he probably needs more rotation. Some rumors that he's going to start. And I think he could start, depending on if they decide to change their formation, which they could do because he's versatile. I think it's a really good move because it builds it for now and for the future.
Speaking of Real Madrid, their absolutely ridiculous run to the Champions League title, not as recent anymore, but still somewhat recent. Just the comebacks they had against PSG yeah. and Man City. Just the whole path to the title there was really probably one of the best stretches of soccer that I have ever watched.
Yeah.
And it was just a lot of fun.
It was definitely
watch.
Fascinating to watch how they picked their moments. A lot of times they would sit back and then in the blink of an eye they would score a goal or two and completely switch the tide of a game. Obviously we haven't talked soccer in a while, which is why we're covering this, but yeah, it was really crazy, especially how Benzema stepped up, 10 knockout goals, tying Ronaldo's record. It was really impressive. He could have beat it if his disallowed goal against Liverpool had counted, which I think a lot of people felt it should have, including some ex-referees, but that's besides the point. I mean, I feel like there were a lot of timely goals, magical moments, and it was really impressive how they overcame. Realistically, this was the most unexpected of their now five Champions Leagues. Over the last decade, it's really impressive how they won it. They weren't expected to get this far, and they faced a lot of favorites. They faced the reigning champions in Chelsea. They faced the highly touted PSG after a very impressive and highly touted transfer window. And they faced, obviously, Pep Guardiola's Man City before facing Liverpool in the final, who had their eyes on a quadruple until the last few weeks. So, and they were obviously down in a lot of games, and they managed to come through and win big games.
That just shows the talent and the genius of Carlo Ancelotti.
The championship pedigree that the players have.
Yep.
Like they never gave up, especially at the Man City game. Obviously, as a Real Madrid fan, I always watch games to the end, but it was interesting because I feel like that game, it felt like it was over the City game, and then Rodrigo came in with two goals after the 90th minute in stoppage time. And yeah, it was a really impressive run, very fascinating. I think it was one of the, obviously I'm biased, but I think it really was one of the most exciting I've watched in a while. Now going over to PSG, precisely, they have decided to part ways with Mauricio Pochettino, and they were looking towards Zidane. A lot of sources say that they kind of had contacts with him, but it ultimately did not come to fruition, and he's still holding out for that France job. Probably will be after the World Cup at this point. There's no chance that France probably sacked Deschamps this close to the Champions League. And they have set their eyes on Nice manager Gauthier, who obviously won the Ligue 1 just 2 years ago with that Lille team. So I think that's a decent move. He's a solid manager. but I'm not sure if it takes him to the next step. Heading over to the Premier League, Chelsea's takeover is completed. Million billionaire Todd Boehly, with stakes in the Los Angeles Dodgers and Lakers, takes over in majority. He took over from the Russian oligarch Abramovich. He was forced to sell the team, and now they'll be able to proceed. Obviously, a lot of their assets were frozen. They weren't able to make some dealings and contribute in part to Antonio Rudiger ending his renewal talks and moving on to Real Madrid. And he apparently has his eyes set on transfer targets. We'll see how that goes over there in London.
Yeah, interesting. Interested to see what kind of budget the new ownership's gonna.
Yeah, if give they're as aggressive,
Thomas Tuchel to work with.
Yeah.
But yeah, Abramovich was a very aggressive. Really wanted to let the team buy whoever they saw fit for what would help them get to that next level. And I think it would be good for Chelsea if the new owners are going to continue like that. But I also feel like it's very unlikely that they'll find another owner willing to throw money around
as
like
aggressive.
That.
But I think he seems, as of now, he's kind of like wants to help the team, but we'll see. Heading over from that part of London to the north, we go over to Arsenal, where they have completed the signing of Gabriel Jesus from Manchester City for at least 45 million euros plus add-ons up to 55 million. I think this is a decent signing. They might intend to play him as striker, but the best part about him is that he's very versatile. With City last season, he ended up shifting over to the right a lot of the season. Especially one of the best things about him, I feel, is that he gives energy, he presses, he attacks, and you can help them win, especially in Arteta's system.
I think another thing that a lot of people forget is he's still only 25 years old, so he's still really young, fits that Arsenal transfer strategy of staying very youthful, and definitely addresses that need at striker, especially after Lacazette leaves for Lyon. And they just signed Nketiah, but from what we've seen, he hasn't really shown the ability to be
to lead a line.
The leader of a contending team at the level that they want to be at. But especially now in Europe, they need those reinforcements and need to make those extra signings with the more extra games they'll be playing this season.
Yeah.
United have been going back and forth trying to sign Frankie de Jong from Barcelona for what feels like forever.
Yeah.
And it's just been kind of a weird saga. It's kind of weird.
At times it seemed like both clubs wanted the deal to be done, and it's just de Jong who wants to stay in Barcelona, which I understand. I don't know. I feel like obviously he's living there right now.
Yeah. I feel like as a player it's just a lot less comforting to move that far away, especially if it's not really one that you're 100% sure with.
Yeah, because it's not really an upgrade. They're not really. I mean, United.
It's pretty
really,
much going from. Yeah. Your, United it's pretty much a sideways attractive. Move. They're both really historic, like clubs that most people would love to play for just because of the popularity of the name. But they're both kind
Even
of in
then,
an interesting position with their recent performances in the past couple of years.
That's true, but even then, Barcelona obviously did qualify for a Champions League spot, and De Jong, from that point of view, probably won't want to just go down to United and play lesser football. So I understand from his side, but it does seem like even Barcelona want to move on from him and just more so recoup some transfer fee. I don't know how long this goes on because I feel like the player doesn't want to go, but he's kind of being pushed almost from both sides. Obviously, Ten Hag, the Dutch manager, taking over at United, wants him. We'll see. And it seems like Barcelona wants to pursue someone like Bernardo Silva if they do manage to sell him. So you have to be seeing what happens with that transfer. We run over here to the MLS. Gareth Bale, free agent after leaving Real Madrid just now, is going to LAFC.
See this one as kind of just something to maintain the just staying on the pitch, staying in training while leading up to the World Cup. I think if Wales didn't qualify for the World Cup, retirement was very much in the picture for him. But I feel like this move to the MLS is pretty much, I wouldn't have been surprised if he did this World Cup or not, just to kind of...
Yeah, he had mentioned wanting to go to the MLS possibly, and mentioned LA specifically. So it's not that surprising of a move. I feel like he could do well. I mean, he's still only 32.
Yeah.
He could still contribute.
The contract was pretty small. Like a year or a year and a half with a player option to extend it for another 6 months or something like that.
It's definitely a big step for the MLS.
Yeah, definitely.
Getting a player of his caliber, I think, you know.
And he's still not that far out of his prime. Yeah. Like, he's still a really good player. Obviously, he fell out of favor at Real Madrid, but...
It depends on his motivation, we'll see.
If he's motivated to actually be out and put the work in to try and help LAFC be successful, I think he will be quite the force if he can be anything close to what he was in his prime at Real Madrid, because he was truly a special player.
Yeah.
I remember a while back when he almost got transferred to the Japanese league, when we talked about that a couple of years ago, and just never fell through. So I think he was looking at moving to
smaller leagues, to try and be the big name.
Yeah.
And just be that guy.
It's good for, it'll be good for him, I think, to go over to the MLS. I think it'll be good for, obviously it's going to be good for the MLS getting a guy like him, which I don't think they've had in a couple of years, at least since Zlatan was with the Galaxy.
And Rooney.
Yeah.
They just signed Insigne as well.
Yeah, that MLS making a lot of moves. Insigne going to Toronto. They've signed another Italian from Serie A. Bale obviously moving to LAFC.
And Chiellini as well.
Yeah, Chiellini is moving over to LAFC as well.
And I think they just re-signed Carlos Vela. So MLS is retaining the talent and good players that they had, as well as bringing in more players from Europe to really bolster the caliber and the competition of their league, which is
all that
really
with
good
the
to see.
New TV deal that they just got with Apple TV, for like $700 million. So the league on the come up keeps getting bigger and bigger, and the value of the teams keep increasing. So that's really good for the MLS and its growth.
Heading over to England, we see Manchester City is signing Leeds and England midfielder Calvin Phillips for around £42 million plus add-ons.
This has been a move that's kind of been rumored since last summer. I think a lot of big clubs have been looking into trying to get him for a while.
Yeah.
But the actual transfer itself, now that it went through, kind of got swept under the carpet. Not really something that has drawn a lot of attention, which is surprising because obviously he's a really good player. Obviously, playing a more defensive midfielder role, he's not going to have like the flashy stats of goals and assists and all that stuff.
He's solid. He can progress the ball. He can pass well.
Leeds did struggle a little last year, but
almost every game.
They managed to stay up, managed to fundraise some money, and
build moving forward without him. He's been a key player for them. It's really insane the depth that they have over there at Manchester City. So obviously they already have, I think, in my opinion, defensive midfielder in the world, Rodri, right now, and they just have another £42 million to shell out for an England midfielder.
The rotation that they have is ridiculous. You'll have you'll have Rodri out there who's just extremely,
he's really good.
Never puts a foot wrong.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then anything happens with him or he's not starting, if Calvin Phillips right there to come in. So there's really no breaks whenever you're playing against them.
Yeah, and we've seen a lot of rumors for Manchester City. And Brighton left back Cucurella, just to see if they ultimately do make a move. Pep seems to be a fan of the player.
Brighton did seem like they wanted to hold on to him, and it didn't seem like the player himself was super sure about the move.
Yeah, because he'd be backing up Cancelo, who's probably the best left back in the Prem.
And I think he had a really good season last year. I don't see I think from his perspective, it's probably best for him to stay at Brighton and continue to get solid minutes and just playing rather than rotating through.
A lot of players do seem to be, I don't know, maybe it's the money that agreed to sign just to be a rotation piece in Pep's system, because that's, I think, one of the most interesting parts of his system, but there's no real guaranteed starters. And then he actually does a pretty good job rotating the squad, in my opinion.
The idea of winning trophies, I would assume. The money and the trophies. But I feel like as a player, it would get frustrating if you're not consistently in the squad.
Yeah, for sure.
Especially if you know you're a player of a caliber that is very capable of doing so.
Yeah. Other news from the Premier League, former Manchester United midfielder Paul Pogba is returning to Juventus on a free transfer from Manchester United again. Just about 10 years later, so it's funny.
It's a pretty funny sequence of events. United just paying lots of money for practically a loan of Paul Pogba for a few years, and then he just goes back to Juventus.
Very mixed stay. He had his moments, but ultimately, mix of him, injuries, sometimes effort, I guess, and like effort to make it work.
Yeah. I mean,
and then obviously their mismanagement and ultimately, all that showed for a $100 million investment at the time rolled the record was just a Europa League and an FA Cup. So, kind of disappointing.
I wouldn't say it was a complete failure, though. He still
was
Paul Pogba.
It really wasn't the greatest structure around
when he was healthy.
Yeah.
He still showed that he's a quality player.
Moving forward, Allegri has one of his key players, former key players, back. So, and just to see how they continued. They obviously weren't really in the race this year. Even Napoli, obviously Inter Milan, and AC Milan were the main two opponents yet again. They finished first and second back-to-back years for the first time in a long time. So, the two Milan powerhouses are back in Serie A.
Juventus really struggling without Ronaldo.
Yeah, who needs to catch up now.
But now that they have they've been on a steady decline. I think they'll be able to bounce back, but...
Yeah, I'm not sure
about
if they.
Dybala's future.
Yeah, the ball is definitely on his way out. I'm not sure if they win, but I think they do.
I think they'll definitely make improvements.
Three
though.
Again, yeah. Another free transfer. Obviously, we've seen an increase in those. Sadio Mane is joining Bayern Munich on a free transfer. That's my bad. He signed for $40 million from almost seemed like a free transfer because it was really obvious after the Champions League that he was on his way out. Yeah, he was set on his exit. Liverpool ultimately weren't left to ask for too much. He only has a year left on his contract with the danger of becoming a free agent. I think I've read that too often. And ultimately, they were, despite wanting obviously more money, they were forced to accept the $40 million offer plus add-ons. Seems like a really solid transfer for Bayern Munich.
The attack of Bayern Munich, even though Lewandowski is most likely leaving, that attack is horrifyingly quick and brutal.
Yeah. Sadio Mane might be, at this point, I don't know, at times he seemed a little too slow to be a winger. Top level, he's not as fast anymore. But
he's very capable of moving into the center, though.
In the center,
they
do
with
him. He could do that.
Especially if Lewandowski leaves, exactly. I would see that as a pretty likely thing.
He was capable of running the false nine Klopp system last year, as he did in the Champions League final. He was pretty dangerous. Obviously almost scored, if not for Thibaut Courtois' quick reflexes. So interesting to see how he fits in the Bundesliga. I feel like he'll fit well. Staying with Bayern, Lewandowski continues to want out. Obviously, he had some interviews urging the club to just let him go. Bayern officials have continued to say that he has a contract until next year. So they kind of seem insistent in wanting to keep him, which makes sense. He's obviously a very good goal scorer. He's a record goal scorer. Barca are obviously the most interested party. And Bayern reportedly have demanded, according to reports, anywhere from 50 to 60 million euros from Barca for the player with 1 year left. Obviously, although very good, he's also above 30, so like 33 now. Interested to see if they are able to find the money in cash in or not. I feel like, I don't know, at this point, I think it's 50-50 whether or not he's forced to stay or he is let go.
Yeah, I think the stance that I heard from the Bayern Munich. I wasn't sure if it was the owner or the manager, but he seemed to think as if there's no transfer that goes through, he's expected to. Yeah, if Barcelona doesn't meet the price, he's expected to show up and put in the work just when he's still with.
Yeah, Bayern. They don't have a owner, but yeah, they have like a president. Yeah. He's talked, and then so has Oliver Kahn, who's obviously also up there in their hierarchy. And yeah, they've both been kind of like firm about that. Interested to see what happens. I feel like unless he's been a professional for a while, he might show up. But I mean, I guess I understand his point. He's 33. He wants to move. Mm-hmm. He's done it all. If you think about it, in the Bundesliga, so it's, people pointed out and I realized that. So I understand his point of view. I'm kind of intrigued to see what happens over there.
Not sure why Barcelona thinks they need another striker though.
Yeah. I mean, Depay and Aubameyang weren't the most effective at times last year, but yeah, I don't know. They have a lot
of issues. Seems like they have a lot of other issues to address before striker.
Definitely, we're getting the transfer of Ferran Torres so far too. But in other news, Lukaku is set to return to Internazionale Milan after only 1 year at Chelsea, which is a very disappointing move, which ultimately leaves Chelsea with egg on their face.
Yeah, pretty, I don't know. There's really nothing to summarize how just bad that saga was for him. Just didn't work out at Chelsea. Didn't really seem like he wanted to put in the work to make it work out. And basically, it was just a cash cow for Inter, and now he's going back for 10 mil.
The biggest winner situation is Inter's estate, because obviously they just won 100 million from him.
Yeah. And they paid another 10 mil for the loan fee to get him back, but that's nothing compared to what they
exactly stole a win for them. And I feel like he, unfortunately for Chelsea fans, will probably succeed again with Milan. Obviously, Conte did leave, but they're still running the same what was that, 3-5-2, and Lautaro's still there. That was obviously a really good partnership. Correa's capable up there, and they still competed for the title, so I think he'll still be effective there. That was a funny move, but I think Chelsea will come out losers for spending the 100 million, and Inter will still be fine. And finally, we'll close it out. The NHL congratulating the Avalanche for closing out the Lightning. Tampa Bay preventing them from three-peating the Stanley Cup.
Mm-hmm.
They beat them today and sealed it. So congratulations to them.
And defenseman Cale Makar won the Conn Smythe. Had two goals in the 7-0 game that Avalanche when they destroyed the Lightning. So just congratulations to the Abs and big win for them. So that's going to be it for Second Take episode 42. The boys are finally back and we are out of here. You can follow us on Twitter at SportsReportPo1. You can follow me on Twitter at Billy on SportsRepBilly. You can follow Alejandro on Twitter at Alejandro_SRP.
Yep.
You can follow Aiden on nothing on Twitter because he abandoned it. You can follow us on Instagram at Second Take Show. And you guys can also subscribe to us on YouTube. We're at 115 subscribers right now, and the videos are doing pretty well. So go check it out. We post all clips from podcasts and full-length scouting boards on there. Also highlight videos.
Sometimes, yep.
And we will see you in the next one. Peace.
Thank you.